This is Stephen Strang. I want to introduce my listeners to Charisma Magazine if you don't already get it. Or if you do get it, you could respond to this special offer and we will continue your subscription into the future. The offer is to give you both of my books on Donald Trump, God and Donald Trump, and the new one, Trump Aftershock. These are a value of just less than $50, plus 2 years of Charisma, which costs around $40, and you can get the whole thing for only $39. Now, let me repeat. You get both of my best-selling books and 2 years of Charisma for only $39, and all you have to do is go to this site, trumpbooks.charismamag.com. I hope that you'll take advantage of it because it's a good offer and it's my way to try to connect you with Charisma and also get more copies of my book out there. Thank you for listening to The Strang Report, and here's my episode.
Welcome to The Strang Report with Steve Strang on the Charisma Podcast Network. This episode was produced to discuss and address issues within our nation and around the world from a Christian worldview.
The television program Inside Edition recently did an ambush interview with evangelist Kenneth Copeland. It was repeated in Fox News. It is the same old, and I felt that as a journalist, I should respond. Hello, everyone. This is Stephen Strang, and on this edition of The Strang Report, I'm going to give my analysis of what happened to Kenneth Copeland in this interview. Now, I've known Kenneth Copeland since the late 1970s. One of the first major interviews I did with a Christian leader was with Kenneth Copeland in 1979. I flew out to his headquarters, which was different than it is now, in or near Fort Worth, Texas, and flew back with him and his ministry team to Jacksonville, Florida, where he was having a big conference. It was the only time that they would give me for a sit-down interview. So I sat in the back of the plane with him. It was a prop plane, I remember. Kenneth Copeland at the time was only 42 years old. I got out the article recently and reread it. He was only on the radio. He had a dream of being on television, yet his ministry was already prominent enough that I felt that we should cover it in Charisma Magazine. So I know for a long time that he has had an airplane. That seemed to be the subject of this Inside Edition story. There was a young lady reporter who did what's called ambush journalism. She kind of rushed up to him while he was getting into a vehicle on the passenger side. I read in the press that he was in Branson, Missouri at the time. It was unexpected. She came up, identified herself, thrust a microphone in his face, and asked why he didn't fly commercial. Now, you know, we hear a lot about fake news, and President Trump is one that kind of made that popular. But there are certain things that happen in journalism that I've seen ever since I started back in the 1970s. In fact, I was in secular journalism. I was a born-again, spirit-filled Christian back in that era. And, you know, I was taught and I tried very hard to be objective. Yet I was not willing to go along with their view of objectivity when it came to Christianity. I think it's one of the reasons why I started my own media so that I could report on what we believed the Lord was doing and a lot of good things. And here is the drift going all the way back to the 70s, and it's a lot of it's just the same old, same old. Okay, let me tick this off. First of all, reporting on Christianity is mainly important only if there's something kind of controversial. And there are certain things they think are controversial, and one of them is if ministers make any money at all. And this was the theme. You can watch the Inside Edition report, and she said, I took some notes, and three or four times, well, you know, a lot of people say it's not right for a preacher, or sometimes she called him a pastor, to make any money. Now, if you look at this historically, in a way, this goes all the way back to the Middle Ages with St. Francis, who started the Franciscans, and he taught that the priests should beg, not get paid, beg for as they went around, and that people would give them sort of what they needed to barely live. And to some extent, there's still this thought in Western civilization that people who preach the gospel should sort of live at that level. You know, nobody goes up to a doctor and says, you made an oath to help people and you're making money at it. Why do you make money at this? Why do you live in a nice house? Nobody says that to a lawyer. These are professionals. And many people in our culture do recognize that members of the clergy are professionals, but the press don't. There's this monotonous hammering on this again and again and again. It's like if you make any money at all, there's something wrong with you. Now, the fact is that most Americans live more or less at the level of their means. That's just what happens. If you don't have any money, you figure out a way to live at a lower level. If you run a large organization, whether it's a business or maybe a political organization or even some large ministries, and there's funds there, you're able to do what you need to do with it. So, for example, a very poor politician who has absolutely no money, maybe in a local area, would get by walking door to door or maybe driving to their different events and so forth. But if they have a big national campaign and they've raised millions of dollars, as happens now, they'll fly, especially if it's across the nation, because they have to get from place to place very quickly. And so it is with ministries in a situation like Kenneth Copeland and many other ministries. There's a number of large ministries that have airplanes. And why is this so controversial? This reporter took a comment that Kenneth Copeland apparently made. I have not verified this with him. I'm just going by what's on Inside Edition, that he didn't like to be in a tube with a bunch of demons. Well, you know, Brother Copeland has a sense of humor. And in certain settings, he would describe what goes on in airplanes. It is like a tube. It's very crowded. And, he'd be speaking a little bit in hyperbole, but there are people in those airplanes who are not spiritual. You know, sometimes they have to haul them off because they get into fights with each other. An airplane these days, a commercial airline, is a flying bar. You know, they serve alcohol. A lot of people, they don't get too tipsy because they won't serve them that much. But, you know, there's a lot of things that are not spiritual. It's not necessarily a good environment. And Brother Copeland makes this point. He also made the point that he was not talking about the people. He was talking about principalities and powers, which we as Christians believe. The Bible says we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities and powers. And there are sort of demonic activities. There can be kind of an oppression, just an atmosphere. And someone like Kenneth Copeland, who's flying to crusades, and in fact, he told about how he had to fly recently from Africa over to Peru to be involved in two different meetings. And he couldn't do that, of course, unless he didn't have his own airplane. Now, I have not talked to anyone at the Copeland Ministry. I haven't shared any emails or texts. I've had no contact with them. They did not ask me to do this, but I just felt that we need to put this in perspective for several things, for several reasons. First of all, when someone like him is attacked, it seems like everybody kind of withdraws and kind of lets it ride it out on their own. I decided I wanted to speak up because this kind of journalism is very typical. They just hammer the same thing again and again. Now, the young lady did seem to be professional as much as you can be with ambush journalism. The entire interview was conducted with the car door open and him with one foot in the car door. And she caught him off guard. I felt that he handled it very well. He was polite to her. He indicated that they watched Inside Edition at his home. He said nice things. At one point, he said, Jesus, help me. Kind of like a little prayer. And then he kind of preached the gospel to her. He talked about the Abrahamic blessing that's in the book of Genesis. He talked about the fact that he preached the gospel. And if I remember correctly, he said there were 122 million people who've come to Christ over the period of his very long ministry. They give millions of dollars to help the poor, and they couldn't do that if it was a little ministry. Listen, I've watched this ministry up close and personal. I also flew to Manila back in 1981. It was the first overseas crusade that he did. Since then, of course, he's done many. And I got to know the ministry up close and personal. I was there for a couple of weeks with him. Everyone I've ever known in that ministry has always been high caliber, ethical. They tell the truth. There isn't a lot of double dealing. I've seen that they give very, very generously. And as a personal Christian, rather than through my organization or anything else, I support this ministry every month. I regularly give to this ministry because I believe in it. It's one of the most generous ministries. And listen, I've seen them all up close and personal. And there are preachers who emphasize prosperity gospel, and they do it because they really do want a big lifestyle. From what I've seen, the Copelands, I've been out to their headquarters in Fort Worth, and they're very nice, but it's not ostentatious. It isn't a monument to Kenneth Copeland. It's an ongoing ministry that will outlive him and will continue, I'm sure, after he's in heaven, because none of us live forever. I want to say that I admired the way he handled it. He was polite to the lady. He shared with her the gospel. at the end, he grabbed her hand and asked her her name and even prayed for her. She said something about both of her grandfathers being sort of poor preachers, and this undoubtedly, colored her own view. Well, listen, I can identify with that. My father, my grandfather, and my father-in-law were all ordained Pentecostal preachers. None of them were poor, but none of them had any money. They pastored, at least my father and grandfather pastored small churches. My father-in-law actually was one of the pastors who had a larger church in the 1940s, believe it or not. But most of his ministry, he pastored also smaller churches. And, they were careful and they were able to pay their bills, but they certainly couldn't afford an airplane. So I can identify with that. There's a lot of jealousy in the ministry, unfortunately. And there are people who are jealous of more successful ministries. I've seen it again and again the years I've been covering the Christian community. There's also a lot of jealousy in the Christian publishing industry. Smaller publishers kind of jealous of bigger ones, or people have been jealous of me. So do they say they should live in a house the same size as mine? I live in a nice house. It's not a palace. I've lived there for 20 years. I don't personally propagate what's called the prosperity gospel. In fact, that term has really come from others, and it's kind of a derogatory term. But I do believe that if we work hard, God will bless us. I believe in the Abrahamic blessing. I believe that it applies to us Christians through the book of Galatians, that the blessings of Abraham, that we're heirs to the same blessing. There's a lot more that I could say about this. I think there's a lot of complications. There's a lots of different angles. Even within the Christian community, there's a lot of jealousy and people look down on people that they call the prosperity gospel. In fact, I know a couple of ministries. I think that you would call them non-charismatic evangelical ministries that were very, very critical of prosperity preachers. And listen, there are a few examples. I could name them. I'm not going to, but of where I believe that there are some excesses. But in this one instance, and I'm not going to mention the ministry's name, they were very critical. The head of the ministry lived in a very nice house behind a huge gate, and the ministry had an airplane. Now, that's prosperity any way you measure it. Now, she kept going back to the reporter, she kept saying, well, you know, she was talking about the people in the airplane. Apparently, she just was really focusing on the fact that he didn't want to fly commercial because of the kind of people that are on airplanes. Well, you know what? You could make the same argument about a bus, a Greyhound bus. And taking a bus is a whole lot less expensive than buying a car, making payments on it, paying the insurance, paying the gas and maintenance on it. But I'll tell you what, almost nobody takes the bus unless they have no other option because it is so inconvenient. And listen, I haven't taken the bus in a long time, but there was a time around the time I was in college that, you know, I took the bus one time, a 24-hour bus trip. It was quite an experience from Florida up to Missouri. I had to get up there, and I guess I couldn't afford an airplane ticket back then. But you know, part of it is that if we have the means for a car, it gets us where we need to go when we need to go. If you have the means for an airplane, whether you're a politician or a businessman or the head of a large ministry with hundreds of employees, with ministry locations all over the world, you do that, especially when you have to fly with a whole bunch of people and a whole bunch of equipment. You know, it gets expensive buying airplane tickets if you have a lot of people going to the same place at the same time. I have no criticism of Copeland having an airplane if they can afford it, if their donors have, sent them the money. Now, here's another thing about the journalism. When the Fox News, they apparently picked up an article that was in the Fort Worth paper that picked up the Inside Edition. This is what happens, is that one media will pick it up and kind of repeat it. In the report on Fox, they didn't go in at all about how Brother Copeland was polite to the lady, how he took time to answer her questions. You know, he could have just gotten in the car and shut the door and driven off, and that would have been on TV. You know, it would have been, he refused to talk to the reporter. But he didn't. You could tell it was unrehearsed. It was unexpected. He even said that she kind of caught him off guard. And she said, well, I don't want to catch you off guard. The newspaper article didn't go into any of that. But this is the thing. When you do an article on someone like that, you dredge up other things. So there were several other ministries that they dredged it up. One where the ministry was actually reaching out for donations to buy one of the most expensive private airplanes they make. And there was a lot of criticism over that. I'm not going to really deal with that issue now. I'm wanting to talk about how there's another side when something comes out in the media like this. We need to not always believe it. I think that this probably won't cost Brother Copeland any donors. People who know his ministry resonate with what I'm saying about it. But the fact is that when there's a steady drumbeat again and again and again, we see this in our national politics. You know, it's like with President Trump. The Mueller report showed that there was no collusion. In fact, Alan Dershowitz, the famous lawyer, says there's no statute against collusion. It may be unethical, but it's not a criminal offense. Yet there's this drumbeat collusion, or obstruction. You know, I asked the question, I've heard others ask the question, how can there be obstruction when there was no crime? But after a while, you just hear this all the time. It's like, well, maybe there's something wrong with it. And the same way with preachers. There's just a steady drumbeat. And the fact is that the people who are raising these questions, and in a free society like ours, where we have a free press, they have the right to answer, to raise the questions. They're people who don't believe in what we believe in anyway. If they didn't criticize about this, they'd criticize about something else, like that we're really dumb enough that we actually believe that Jesus is coming again, or we actually believe that there are things like angels and demons, or we believe that if you don't accept the Lord, you go straight to hell. I mean, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. These are people who don't like us. Now, this young lady obviously grew up in some kind of Christian environment. I'm not saying that she was like this, but I'm just talking about the mindset of journalism. I've seen it for years. And getting back to what I was saying a minute ago, there's this normal thing that when you do a story, especially in the newspaper, which was what I was in, I was a newspaper reporter, you have to dredge up other things that kind of fall into the same category, which really had nothing at all to do with the Inside Edition article. Now, let me make one other point on the other side. We do have a free press in this country. People do ask questions. When people are raising money, there is a great responsibility that goes with it. I believe that the Kenneth Copeland Ministries handles this very, very responsibly. But ministries, whether it's their ministry or someone else, needs to know that when they're big, and when they have airplanes and things like that, people will ask questions. And I think that we need to be respectful of the fact that there are people who will raise questions in the same way that they raise questions about political opponents and celebrities and everybody else. It's just part of our culture. In the Christian community, they can control their message a little bit more. When some of these things are said in the context of a service, Christian people believe it. They sort of understand. Like, for example, when you say you're in a tube with a bunch of demons, they just sort of understand that it's a little bit tongue-in-cheek and it has to do with the spiritual nature, that, you know, not literal demons themselves. Outside people don't know that. And now that so many things are filmed, so many services are filmed and sent out by live streaming, and also since you can find almost anything on YouTube, we need to remember that we are accountable, especially in a situation that is becoming more and more hostile to the gospel. And like I said, we're going to be criticized. If it's not for this, it's something else. But we can avoid being criticized unnecessarily by not saying irresponsible things. Now, I want to be clear. I don't believe that Brother Copeland was irresponsible in any way. In fact, I really admired him. I will wrap up with this observation. I'm disappointed when Christian people are also critical like this. A Christian website or some kind of very conservative Christian, non-Pentecostal program could have made these same charges. And in fact, it was an evangelical leader who I know personally, who sent me the link of Inside Edition a few days before the Fox News thing came out. And he said, I thought you'd find this interesting. And I did. And I clicked on it and watched it. And I emailed him back and said, I thought Brother Copeland handled himself really well. He emailed me back and said, it makes him look awful and disingenuous. Most of America would know who he is and certainly wouldn't understand spiritual things. Well, that's his opinion. Of course, he is right. Most of America doesn't understand spiritual things. I did not think it made him look disingenuous at all. This particular person actually wants everyone to kind of rally around his causes. And I think he should have defended Brother Copeland. You know, what he said was in a private email to me. I'm not going to even hint on who it could have been. But I think that his comment was kind of typical of a lot of Christians. And that's really why I did this podcast. I decided that I wanted to speak up. I wanted to explain some of this stuff about the mindset in journalists because I was trained as a journalist. I went to the University of Florida Journalism School. I graduated top of my class. I got one of the better jobs straight out of college on one of the larger newspapers in the country. And, you know, it was good experience for a couple of years, but it also gave me an inside look of how things were. And back then, they were a lot like they are today, except that it wasn't as overt. And there was at least a veneer of civility and of objectivity, which in a lot of cases is right out the window. Now, I also wanted to get this out on the internet. I knew that some people would be Googling it, and hopefully the podcast and the newsletter that goes with it will come up. Also, it gives people an opportunity to share it with others. And, you know, sometimes these podcasts take off and are shared with tens of thousands. Other times, it's much more modest numbers. But I'm just going to ask you if you agree with me. If you've listened this far, you probably agree with me. If you would just share it, either email it to people or maybe put it on social media and just help get out the word that there is another side and that also this ambush journalism and this kind of trite. I mean, some of these stories I could write with my eyes closed and just put a blank in and you fill in the names of different people and the story is the same. I mean, it's a formula if there ever was one. And the thing is that within journalism circles, they don't see this at all. They have a certain worldview, and we see it in a very, very liberal mindset in the press. And, you know, I've dealt with it in other ways. I've dealt with it in my books that I've written about Trump, and I can tell that I'm starting to go on a rabbit trail. I really need to wrap this up. There's so much more that could be said, and maybe I'll deal with this in other settings. But today, I just decided to share my heart. I did not rehearse this other than taking a few notes of what I heard so I could be specific. I didn't prepare. I just prayed and said, Lord, give me what to say so that people can understand that at least there's another side. And also, I'm going to send this to Brother Copeland so that he knows that I really admired the way he dealt with it. He could have been more hostile. She did ask him questions that were none of her business any more than it's our Brother Copeland's business to ask her how much she makes. You know, now that journalists are becoming celebrities, some of them make just some really wild numbers. I mean, I know personally a few people, and it's the kind of numbers that when I was in journalism school, we could have never dreamed of. So is it right for people to ask them what they make or what kind of perks they get? Of course not. Brother Copeland did absolutely nothing wrong. It's just that they decided that they would hammer him on the fact that he has an airplane. And then the newspaper played up more than Inside Edition, the fact that He apparently has his previous airplane and a smaller airplane, and they have a massive facility out there, and they have an airstrip so they can land them and, I guess, take care of the airplanes, and somehow this is wrong. No, it's part of the cost of having a plane, and they have to make their decisions according to the needs they have, and they are good. I believe they're good stewards of the Lord's money, and this is just a transportation cost. So I'm beginning to repeat myself. I'll go ahead and wrap this up. Thank you for listening this long, and thank you for helping me get the word out. And remember, when you see things like this, pray for these ministries. You know, sometimes there are things that the press will show where there have been wrongs. And especially if there's some kind of scandal or something, boy, the press is the first one to jump on it and play it up. It's kind of like, see, we told you so kind of journalism. In this case, there was nothing of that. It was just sort of the same old, same old. And also, Brother Copeland handled this far better than most ministers. Most ministers are not used to a hostile press. They are used to adoring supporters who support their ministry and who consider them men, or in some cases, women of God. And, you know, they're just not around secular people like this. And I've seen it again and again. They react defensively and it you know, doesn't always make a good impression. With Brother Copeland, it was the exact opposite. And so that's all I'll say, except to thank you for listening to the Strang Report on the Charisma Podcast Network. I'm Stephen Strang. God bless you.
Thank you for listening to the Strang Report with Steve Strang. To read more from Steve, visit his blog, The Strang Report, on charismamag.com. Again, it's The Strang Report on charismamag.com.
This has been a production of the Charisma Podcast Network. Steve and Joyce Strang are the founders and owners of CPN. Dr. Steve Green is the executive producer of the Charisma Podcast Network. We intend to honor God with every podcast and remain thankful to our advertisers and supporters who make these podcasts possible.